What do trains and tefillah have to do with each other? Shabbos Chav Kuf Chav Zayin Amazeiz. Here we are on page Chav Zayin, the first page of the second paragraph, a Revolba's brief intro to tefillah. A familiar passage, we say it Kaseder, every morning at the Birkas HaTorah, we talk about Iyun Tefillah. What is Iyun Tefillah? And why is Iyun Tefillah in that list that we recite after Birkas HaTorah? That seems like mostly a list of acts of chesed. Right, so Havah Shalva Mechavero, and so on and so forth. And Iyun Tefillah. Chesed? Iyun Tefillah Bechlal Gemilas Chasadim, Rashi says, over there, Shabbos Kuf Chav Zayin Beis, Dichziv Gomel Nafsho Ish Chesed, V'Nefesh Hainu Tefillah. Gomel Nafsho Ish Chesed. To give of your nefesh. You're a man of chesed, you're giving of your nefesh. But it says nefesh means daving. Dichziv Gabay Chana V'Hashpochas Nafshi Lefnei Hashem. Chana says, I poured out my nefesh, Ta'akadosh Baruch Hu. Apparently the nefesh is what's in play in tefillah. Rashi says, connect point to point. To daven for someone else is an act of chesed. And, that's a very interesting, you just don't think of tefillah as a bein adam l'chaveiro act. And then, the explanation that Rashi gave, that tefillah is nefesh, so that's fascinating. There was a yachad called echad lahar gish ba'atzmo. Yesterday we spoke about how davening is uniquely human activity. Let's also think about it as an activity of the nefesh. Rov his paskuso shel ha'adam beruchnias shur b'tir. Much, perhaps most, of a person's spiritual development is going to be tied to tefillah. Now, we've heard that before. That sounds either remarkably lovely or a little bit disappointing. What if not? If my tefillah is on fire, that's great. If I feel like I do what I'm supposed to do, but I'm checking in and checking out, what am I missing? He said, well, let's think about this a little bit. And also, there's a question I think a lot of us have talked about, this image, this wonderful image of tefillah being a spiritual encounter, and that's where I'm growing. It sounds so lovely, but like, God is the same every day. How is this supposed to be this? It doesn't seem very creative. For some of us, it's very inspiring. For some of us, it's not so inspiring. And maybe many of us, it's sometimes inspiring, sometimes not. So what are we supposed to make of this? So he said, let's read together the next few lines. Mishayin was followed to feel so to chum shigrati. Uchai bit feel so. If I can get over that hump of not just sort of discharging my routine davening obligation, but to be alive in my davening. You might say, you'll find that as you begin to get in, I may begin to feel like my tefillos are connected. And that's an idea I think he's drawing here from the writings of the Yehuda Levi and a Sefer HaKuzri. Yehuda Levi writes that he seems to be drawing some sort of analogy between three tefillahs a day and three meals a day. Some of those who have listened to some of Yosef Cohen's shmoozing on tefillah may have heard that as well. I believe he too is drawing that from the Sefer HaKuzri. He talks about, the tefillah as being sort of the destination and the starter for your time. The time leads up to the coming tefillah. Coming to feel, and the tefillah at the same time colors the time going forward. It's a pre-hazman, it's the fruit of the time. Stuff is going on. Imagine the following. You're having planning sessions, putting a project together with a group of people. So you have periodic planning sessions, and in between, everyone's working on stuff. We're working on creative ideas and get together from time to time, maybe it's twice a week, maybe it's twice a day, at the crunch time, work on a paper, work on whatever it is. So we're going to get together to put ideas together, and then we'll go our separate ways, and everyone is brainstorming, and everyone is thinking, everyone's coming with ideas, and we come together again periodically to sort of pool our ideas and move forward on the project.
let's imagine a construction project. Maybe you're part of a group that's building a new shul building. So you have people who use the building from different perspectives, and then you have people looking from a financial perspective, you have the architect, the engineer, and they'll come together periodically to pool ideas, and then we'll go our separate ways, and each thinking from an architect. If I'm the finance guy, I'm thinking about fundraising. If I'm the engineer, I'm thinking about the, engineering issues and how we can restructure things. And then we come together periodically to meet and sort of pool ideas. So it'll, all of the creative thinking that happened over the last couple of days is going to come to fruition when we have our next meeting. I had these interesting ideas about reshaping. You were thinking about traffic use, and he was thinking about architectural issues, and he was thinking about legal issues and parking. We're also doing our own thing. We got together, and boom! And that meeting will be the fruit of all of the individual thinking and growing we were doing in our own heads. At the same time, that meeting will also, now that we have the meeting, the next few days of us each thinking separately will be much more productive. But now, let's say I'm the guy who's thinking about legal issues. Now I have a better sense of what I heard everyone else, I've read what the project is, now we'll be able to think creatively. But you think that's sort of that model of working independently, work on your own, and then you get together for a meeting, you pool your ideas, and then you get sort of go separate ways, think about stuff. So that could be a powerful muscle. And I think part of what the Kutsuri is trying to capture, and then we'll come back to Rehova, about tefillah. There's spiritual growth over the course of the morning, the things, maybe there were challenges, maybe things that were hard, I came across stuff that pushed me back, I came across stuff that could be inspiring, I was involved in mitzvahs, I met different people, so tefillah is an opportunity, if you plug into it, for a meeting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And we have three scheduled meetings with HaKadosh Baruch Hu every day. And it's a chance to, if I plug into the fact that to what the opportunity offers me. It's sort of like that meeting time. In other words, the chance to sit with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and process a little bit of like, what are the things that happened before? Like, Aldav Mincha, the chance to sort of filter through for a few minutes, like what happened the first one, what were the things that were inspiring and moving forward, what were the things that were challenges, a difficult moment on the Havero, a difficult challenge on my phone, or in person, whatever it was, Havero, I'm welcome. So that's my... I know I have scheduled meetings throughout the day with HaKadosh Baruch Hu periodically to sort of check in. And if I process well, so then it'll both be a chance to sort of process what happened over the morning of the Mincha, and also to sort of set me hopefully in a better direction for the afternoon. And you might be saying, this all sounds incredibly lovely. Like, what does that have to do with my HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Sort of filtering through and thinking over the morning, that's great, but what does that have to do with Dr. Mincha? It's a reasonable question to ask. So consider the following. If that question bothers you, which looks like it's some people willing to admit that a question on one's mind, right? There's all this beautiful picture of Philo, what's to do with Shema Esrei, then consider the following motion. You have a lunch date with someone. Another type of lunch date. Business date, with a young woman date, whatever it is. So you have a lunch date with someone. You set a time, you set a place. Going out for dinner at Shiloh's, 6:30. Going out to Sammy's for lunch, 12, whatever it is. You show up at the right time, sit down at the table, you order food, you eat, you bench, you go. That successful lunch date. What's missing?
Conversation.
Right. Exactly. Right. Now there was someone else at the table. He or she also showed up and looked at the same menu and ordered lunch, and then you each benched and you went individually. So that, well, you did do lunch together, sort of. I mean, you each ate lunch, but you missed the fact that the lunch was meant to be an opportunity for interaction. The lunch was a platform to enable interaction. So, if you show up to davening, and many of us do this all the time, it's a very normal thing to do, a very natural thing to do, but it's a real shame to miss the opportunity. A lot of us show up and eat the lunch, but forget that the lunch is just the platform for the conversation. So So the nimshal, a lot of us show up and say the Shmona Esrei, but miss the point. Miss the point of the Shmona Esrei. Shmona Esrei is a platform. We get to sit down for coffee with HaKadosh Baruch Hu 3 times a day. We have a standing appointment with the Lord that created the universe. That's something to think about. It's a really, really remarkable thing. And we tend not to think about tefillah in those terms. We tend not to think about tefillah as saying certain words. Maybe doing certain mitzvahs in conjunction with saying certain words. And I would suggest, and this is maybe we'll see, he's going to go on to quote a beautiful kind. And I think that's just the beginning, but I can say it today. But I think a major theme that there are many mikoros for is to consider the fact that the mitzvah of tefillah is not to say a certain text. It's not a mitzvah of recitation. Much as a lunch date is not about eating lunch. If you're meeting a potential client over, you sit down for coffee with a potential client. The point is not to drink coffee. I mean, you should enjoy your coffee. But the coffee is a hechitimsa. Coffee is a means to enable a great conversation. I would even go a step further and say, and maybe this is even an even more precise mashal in certain ways. Let's say you're sitting down with a potential client, or a potential partner, right? Or a potential partner line. Right? Or for that matter, think about a good friend that you have, a guy you've known for a long time. The guy who's still in touch with, maybe he's in this room, maybe he's not in this room, and you've been friends for years. Can you remember the first time you met him? And if you can you remember what you spoke about? So, depending on how your memory works, some of you probably do, maybe it was a particularly dramatic conversation, but the point is, it's not really that important. But by which I mean, the fact that you spoke about, thank you, the fact that you spoke about specific things, a first meeting to build a relationship, a lot of times the content of the conversation is less important than the fact that you're having the conversation. Sometimes the content is really key. Look, and sometimes I may meet a potential client, and it's all about business. And let's see what your needs are, and let me explain to you what I can offer, and let's see, you know, if it's a good fit or not. But when some first conversations are all about content. But a lot of times when it's relationship building, there'll be content. It's sort of weird to show up and just sort of look at each other for 40 minutes. That's awkward. No, of course you can have conversation. And you learn about each other in the conversation. But the conversation is secondary. The content, specifically what you're talking about, in many cases are secondary to the fact that you're talking. And the fact that you're having a good vibe. The fact that you're together with one another. That's really key. That could be true in a personal relationship, it could be true in a business relationship also. We hit it off well, we have a good conversation, we're sort of on the same wavelength. I think, okay, so now that's what I'm talking about. And now our relationship will build. So that, I think, captures much of our thinking about what tefillah could be. This is, we're going to see this as, we'll see not today, and this is rooted in an idea, Chiddush of Chaim has, you know, tefillah, and it expresses itself, I think, in many things that are Nachman writes about tefillah. At times I spoke about this under the title, tefillah at the corner of Brisk and Bresson. I think this is one of the points where Brisk and Bresson actually meet. So this recognition that tefillah is not an act of recitation. Recitation is what we do. Just like you show up to that sit down for coffee and just like not talk to each other, that would be really awkward. The method is conversation. But the goal or the essence is not the specifics of conversation as much as spending time together. The same is true with tefillah. There's a certain minimal method that's required, and that is reciting Shmona Esrei. You can add to it if you like, and you can more, and you can embellish the Shmona Esrei. But the words of the Shmona Esrei are the method through which we daven. That the daven isn't saying words. Daven is based on the Kadosh Baruch Hu. At minimum, here's the minimal conversation that you have. That, I think, is a very important idea. And that, I'll take questions just a moment. Let's sort of, tie the pieces together. So that begins to explain this Sefer HaKuzari idea that before sounded, you know, very lofty and lovely, but very unconnected to what I do. And this idea of, like, the tefillah is the pre-hazman, and that it's the fruit of the last couple of hours, and also sets me forward for the next couple of hours. that mashal I gave before to try to build out the kuzri a little bit, the planning meetings, we each do our own thinking, then we come together for planning, group meetings, then we sort of go off and do our own thinking again, another group meeting. But that's really what it is. There's a lot going on spiritually in my life, in my head, in my heart, in experiences around me, other people. And tefillah is a chance to both sort of take stock of what happened and also get ready going forward. I would have to do Shemar Esrei. Take a deep breath. And maybe take 5 seconds before you start Shemar Esrei. Sort of doing nothing. It's very hard for most of us to actually just stop. And that we're always like moving, doing, saying. Take deep breaths. No profound Kabbalistic Havanas. Just spend 5 seconds thinking of the fact I'm about. Just talk face to face with them. Simple and incredibly powerful. The Rambam, right, talks about that in the Paragal, the Rambam, kind of works off of, and sort of the essence of what Shemar Esrei is all about. The recognition that you're in the presence of that Rambam. The recognition that you are, so to speak, staying at the prophet, like a drug. Just think about that. No miyachad shemus, no fancy kavanas, no spheres. Just the recognition that I'm over the nation. Now I'm about to speak to the world. 5 seconds is not a lot of time, and it's a very long time. Actually, we should try. Because we're so used to it, we're always moving in and out, to just stop for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You take a few steps back and stop before you take a few steps forward. I take a few steps forward, whatever it is. You try that experiment, it will cost you less than 2 minutes a week. Higher mathematics, probably 15 seconds a day. This time I know you guys are busy. I'm pretty sure that everyone here could afford 10 minutes a month. You try that. If you spend 10 minutes doing that over the course of this month, and look back in a month, when we get around to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, I think you will be very, very excited with the results. 5 seconds a day. 5 seconds, either 5 seconds first for us. Simple, powerful. Just remember, take a few deep breaths. Remember, I'm about to talk to Keshav. And over time, incrementally, that can have a very significant impact in unlocking the potential of a Shemar Esrei. That you're no longer sort of showing up to the lunch date and just eating lunch and leaving and sort of ignoring the person. You see, and trust him. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem, is very, very patient. If we had lunch dates with a person 3 times a day for the last number of years, and every single time we showed up at 8 and left and didn't interact with the person that trust him was, we probably would have lost that standing appointment a long time. Kadosh Baruch Hu, Baruch Hashem, is very patient, and you can jump in. And so then we begin to understand. I think that's a critical key to unlock. It's already there. We're not talking about doing deep yichudim and meditation. Just diving Shemar Esrei. It doesn't even take so much longer. It's not a question of how long your Shemar Esrei is. It's the same number of minutes. Be more, be less. But it's just with an awareness. I am talking about Kadosh Baruch. And awareness of what we mentioned yesterday, right? First is the word atah. They keep saying you throughout Shemar Esrei. It's a remarkable thing. Like we're talking Kadosh Baruch directly. You. Stop and think, wow. And then over the course of Shemar Esrei, we're asking Kadosh Baruch Hu to help me with this, to help me with that, to help me with this, to help me with that. You only ask people for help if they're in a position to help you. The guy who knows calculus is the one you're going to ask for to help me figure out how to work this problem. You're not going to ask someone the friend you call when you get a flat is the friend who knows how to change time. You reach out to the people who you anticipate are in a position to be helpful with the issue that you have. So the experience of talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and being mindful of that, I'm talking to HaKadosh Baruch Hu several times a day. And then the experience of reaching out to him for every single aspect of my life. That's a sort of powerful reminder that he's in charge. You only reach out to people who you think you can help. But if you're reaching out to a being, God, to help you with everything, with health, with finances, and with intelligence, and with spiritual pursuits, and with national issues, and with personal issues, and you just think about the middle brachos of Shemar Esrei, wow, he's the one who can handle everything. powerful reminder of to whom I'm speaking. And then he says, and we'll close with this, he says, you know, it's true that the words of Shema Esrei don't change. The words of Shema Esrei don't change. He says, neither does the window of your car, or neither does the window of the train. Let's close the Ali Shur for the morning with that mashal. Here's smack of the mashal and osei berakevet. It was takel banof. You're sitting in a train. Again, I'm not sure I really recommend taking the train from New York to LA. Let's talk about a more reasonable time to use a train. You take the seat. Let's say you're going down to DC. Let's say you're going down to DC for APAC convention. So then, oftentimes taking the train, if you have the funding for it, taking the train will often be the most reasonable way to travel. Probably more efficient than flying, and if you can afford it, certainly more humane than taking a bus. You can work, you can sleep, you can get a lot done on the train. You're taking the train down the Northeast Corridor from New York, or maybe depending where you live, maybe you pick up in Penn Station, New York, or Penn Station, Newark. You take it down to Washington. So you look out the window periodically. You have work, you have stuff you're working on, you're preparing for meetings. But if it's a daytime train, you look at the train periodically. It keeps changing. That's sort of obvious. Obviously, the view out the window, if the view out the window isn't changing, that means that your train isn't moving, right? Well, that's sort of obvious. If afilo nishtaneh hanov, becholos ein mara rega doma lemishneim. Says even if you're moving slowly, but still as you move, you're seeing, even if you're seeing the same skyscape, the same cityscape, you're seeing the same trees, but as you move even slowly, you're seeing them from a different perspective. And certainly as you move on from spot to spot, there are new things that you get to see out the window. You can see it from a new perspective, from a new position. Came back fila. Adam no seyehu. Every human being is a traveler on a journey through life. Halof and asel kolim echayot. We ask one's love. The afrega eno roe es haolam eosin nekuda penimis ba amad kodim. You're not going to see the world from the same position as you saw it at an earlier point. Even if it's the same elements. But sometimes, like, you know, 20 miles later, you're seeing this totally new landscape out the window, right? So, from this year to next year, there'll be a whole host of new people in your life, and a whole host of totally new comments. Even, you know, from one day to the next. Maybe, you know, the same players, the same basic elements in your life, the same people, the same routines, but still, you're older, you're different, you're maturing, you're growing, and you're seeing the same things from a different perspective. Think about your take on your siblings 3 years ago, and your take on your siblings now. Think about your take on your parents 3 years ago, your take on your parents now. Think about your take on this building and the people who fill this building 3 years when you were a freshman, and now. Same building, more or less. Mostly the same people. Yeah, the guys who are seniors are gone. Okay. But still, I assume your perspective is very different. Your perspective on the same staff members you met here 3 years ago, it's not the same as now. You're different. Why? Because you're different. They could be different also. But more to the point, you're different. You're not in the same place you were. Same, physically the same place. But you've grown, you've matured, you're different. And hopefully you have a better, deeper, broader perspective. Think about the train. As you're traveling through life. You end up with totally new elements in your life than you had 5 years ago. Or it could be not just new elements from yesterday, but maybe you've changed a little bit. And he says, that tefillah can give you an opportunity to stop and think and think about this. So tefillah's an opportunity to get off the treadmill and stop doing moving and just take a deep breath and think and focus and consider. And he closes this paragraph that we closed today with a quote from the Seals of Charon, deep into the Sefer Parakeet Test, within the Parakeet. It talks about the power of tefillah as orally wait time and everything can quiet down inside, sort of turn off some of the static and tune in to some of the rishamim dakim, the subtle nuances of romos, of growth, and of thinking big, the spiritual ambition, plugging into a finer sense of enuma. Mishu bal seichel navon, someone who's a wise person. The me'atis bonus of sima slave, yuchalik boa b'libo amitus hadava. Some thought, some focus, you can come to recognize the profundity. The extent to which I'm interacting with a person, the love of this hadei, the meitov mevakesh, to recognize I'm have a chance to see the person. I have a chance to make a person of the person. Who is Baruch Shmuel Mazin? Lo, Makshut Noah. The person pays attention. The person is going to consider what I have to say. Kashay Daber Yishar Re'eu, Re'eu Shamea Makshut Noah. To know there's a listening, a divine listening ear. It's powerful stuff. And again, it's radically different, perhaps, from the way we're dying right now. At the same time, it's all the pieces are there. It's not talking about a davening that looks that would look radically different or would take a radically different amount of time on the clock. But it is a davening that will feel radically different for the davening. And it's a davening that can grow me in very gradual but significant, substantial way. If I plug into what it is that spend time is going for, spend time recognizing what it is that I'm showing up to lunch. So make sure to pay attention to the one across the table. Remember that this is really about a meeting. You'll have a good time. Big part of lunch. The goal is to remember that I'm I have the opportunity to interact with the Kadosh Baruch Hu. That's powerful stuff. And from this, a lot will flow. So next time we'll see how the second layer, he talks a little bit about Chaim and some other pieces, sort of balancing the different types of Havana. We will get to that. We've been waiting, Dusty, waiting very patiently, and go as well.
So, the
greatest
example of the
fulfilled
nature of
Shmuel
is the
Shmuel
Shmuel coming together periodically to discuss ideas. How does that really correlate to Dobby? Because, as Joe was saying before, even though wherever you say that it's not that we're not supposed to be reciting something, at the same time, though, we're not really getting feedback from others in that same way in the muscles.
Correct. Yes, you're making a very good point. Right? The mashal I gave of the periodic meetings about building the shul is an imperfect mashal in many ways. Specifically, we don't get to hear from HaKadosh, unless you're a Navi, you don't get to hear directly from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If a person develops his refinement of Emunah, you begin to see, hopefully in your life, times when you'll see the divine fingerprints. But definitely you're not... You're not going to get direct verbal text messages from HaKadosh Baruch Hu unless, again, if you're a Navi, Baruch Hashem. You should be Zaycha. But right, so it's not an exact mashal. But what I meant with that was just sort of thinking about a single person's experience. If you're one member of that group, right? So, and think about the interaction between the times of the week when you're working on your own. Let's say you're the architect. Right? So you're spending however much time you're spending on this account. Let's say you're spending 8 hours a week on this account. So let's say you'll have two meetings over the course of the week. Think about a single person. So let's say we're thinking about that architect, right? What we were saying before, he's spending 8 hours a week on this account. So let's say he has two meetings scheduled every week. They meet Monday afternoon, Thursday night, let's say. So he spends 2 hours of those two meetings, and then he spends 6 hours in the studio, in his own study, sort of working on ideas and shaping and rethinking, redrafting plans. So just think about his own. That's where with Marshall was thinking about one person, right? So the interaction between the time he spends in his study and the time he spends around the meeting table. So the meeting table will number one, be a chance for him to sort of bring to fruition the last 3 hours of thought. Now he can share with others and sort of it can become more, and in the context of of a meeting and become sort of more solidified. Then also, he'll walk away from that inspired. You know, his next 3 hours of working in the studio will be more effective because now he has a better picture of what it is he's trying to shape and build. Oh, we need that. We need to be sensitive to traffic flow and that. I didn't realize because the interaction in those two rooms. Okay, so we need to rethink the stairs, we need to rethink the hallways, whatever it is. Right, so the meetings are a chance to sort of bring to fruition the whatever is going on in his head over the last 3 hours, and also it will further energize the next 3 hours. So I was saying with tefillah, I think that's a one way of capturing what the Kuzari is saying, that tefillah is both the pre-hazman, it's a fruit of the preceding time, and there may have been sort of stuff I've been experiencing, good stuff, bad stuff, potentially inspiring things, and I stop for 5 minutes and damash mesrei and just sit and think with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and sort of like turn off the noise, get off the treadmill and just have quiet inside my head, I could process like, oh, like so process what happened. And also that clarity, whatever I come away with from tefillah with, could hopefully put me in a better place going forward. Maybe the course of Shemoneh Esrei, I'll think about a challenge that I had. And of course, in the morning, there was a guy that he was very trying. He was a little insulting, whatever it was. Like, and I was just moving and running. And I got to daven mincha, and for two minutes, I asked myself, like, was that? Like, I have the chance sort of to unpack in my head. And may not happen right away. It could be over time. But if there's carved out time over the course of the day to just stop and think in the presence of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, to be mizbonin lefnei Hashem, that builds me in a very powerful way. And again, all this is gradual. It's not like I'm going to have one massive Shemoneh Esrei right now, like I'm the big now Moshe Rabbeinu. No. You're not going to be Moshe Rabbeinu. There's only one Moshe Rabbeinu. And you're not going to become a Shmuel HaNavi either. You're not going to radically change from a single Shemoneh Esrei. You're not even, everyone knows the famous Vart from Reb Zusha of Annapolis. Right there he said, Reb Zusha was a brother of Melech of Lizhensk and one of the most famous Talmud in the Maggid of Mezrich, who in turn was probably the most influential Talmud of the Baal Shem Tov. Reb Zusha was a contemporary of Levi Yitzchak of Berditchev and of the Alter Rebbe, the Baal Tanya, the first Lubavitcher Rebbe. So Reb Zusha supposedly said, I get to Shemayim, they're not going to ask me how come I wasn't the Baal Shem Tov, how come I wasn't the Rebbe Kiva, how come I wasn't Moshe Rabbeinu. They're going to ask me how come I didn't become Zusha. Why every person comes to is given a certain hand of chips, a certain hand of cards by Kodesh Baruch Hu, and you're meant to maximize them in the course of a lifetime. Right? So the goal isn't to be Shmuel HaNavi. The goal is to be you. But you're not going to become the best you could be from a single dramatic Shmoneh Esrei. And if you think you're like radical change of a single Shmoneh Esrei, it doesn't sound like the type of thing that is really lasting. But over the course of 1,100 Shmoneh Esreis a year, if a fair number of them were impactful, then over the course of months and years of consistent carving out time to think with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and to process, over time, over the course of months and years and decades, you become who you could become. You become a much more refined version of yourself. Dove, and then we'll move on. I'm sorry? Sure.
So, we said that it's like, if you go right, you go out to a meeting, a lunch meeting, and with one other person, you sit down, you eat, you leave. It's not, but like, if you go to the same lunch meeting and you sit down with the other person, you both order food, and then you go ahead and you pour out your heart to them, and they see nothing, you get up and bench and leave. What's the difference? Because like, you never really get a response during conversations. Like, it's not like you're davening Shemoneh Esrei and suddenly you hear a voice in your head, oh, here's the answer to all your problems. It's like you daven Shemoneh Esrei and then you daven to Hashem, you tell him everything you want, and then nothing happens. Or something happens, but not right then. So you go to this meeting, you say everything you need, everything you want, bench and leave. Without ever getting a response. How is that any different? How is that any more meaningful?
That's a good question. That's an excellent question. Every mashal is necessarily imperfect because any attempt to describe HaKadosh Baruch Hu's divine reality in human terms is always going to be an imperfect mashal, but our best attempt at beginning to grasp a certain larger reality. That said, sometimes you have a conversation with someone, and even with another human being. If you poured out your heart, and the person's there, and you see on their face that they're not really reacting, and they don't really seem to care, so that's really hurtful, right? If you're talking to someone on the phone, you don't see their facial expressions. And it could be you're doing most of the talking, but you might... If I see the person's face and it's unmoving, so obviously he doesn't care. I don't see his face. In fact, I'm not seeing the reaction of his face. Doesn't tell me he doesn't care. And as a matter of fact, oftentimes, someone is carrying around a heavy peckle inside, and you share it with someone else. The person who's doing the sharing will often do the vast majority of the talking. And a lot of times, this is something I think important to keep in mind both as a sharer and as a sharee. When someone comes over to you and wants to share with you stuff on their mind, a lot of times we make this mistake, and this is what will bring us back to tefillah too, but this for a moment is incredibly important interpersonal tool for yourselves. What happens, consider the following. Someone comes over and tells you their tale of woe. A friend comes over, he's like, hey, you look, you know, notice the guy looks a little off today, like seems like he's upset, I don't know what's going on. Oh, you're not going to believe it. And this is going wrong, that's going wrong. So a lot of times, as caring human beings, our natural reaction is to say, don't worry, it will be okay. And we mean that coming from a good place. And we tend to do that pretty automatically, I would imagine most of us do. And it's, but if you consider for a moment what it feels like when you're on the receiving end of that, like I'm having a really rough time. A rough time with a parent, a rough time with a sibling, someone's not healthy at home, someone's sick at home, Rahman Salan, someone's mentally not well, and it's making for very challenging relationships, there's some sort of dysfunction, or financial issues, or whatever, a whole host of different things. School's not working out the way I hoped it would, I'm not getting to the programs I wanted, whatever it is. I'm dating this girl, it looked like it was all going well, now things are falling apart. Whatever's on your mind. You tell someone, like, here's what's happening, they say, don't, it'll be okay. So if you're on the receiving end, you're like, that probably feels horrific, as it should. Why are you telling me it's going to be okay? I have a problem. What, are you a nubby? You know it's going to be okay? It doesn't really help me. You're just like trying to brush me under the rug. I got a problem. Right? But when we're listening, most of us tend to naturally say that. And coming from a good place. Because we have this sort of misimpression in our head. We picked up all this urban legend we picked up along the way. That the best way to make things better is by pretending that they're okay. So like, no, it'll be okay. As though it maybe makes me feel better. Because I don't have to deal with your issue. And somehow, hazily, we think in our own minds, like, that'll make you feel better. It's like, don't worry, it'll be okay. I mean, sometimes that's a correct response, but oftentimes it's A, inaccurate, and B, hurtful. What's probably more helpful, and this is an incredibly important Beinam al-Chavero tool for us to develop, is to instead, the response is to hear the person out. Say, wow, tell me more. And not to say, I know exactly how you feel, because that might not be as bad as it'll be okay, but instead to say something along the lines, in your own authentic words, wow, like that must really hurt, or that must really be frightening, or I can't imagine what that must feel like. To just show that you hear the other person's feelings, or that you're trying to plug in to the other person, to allow him to be heard, is often the most powerful thing you can do for someone. As a matter of fact, Chazal have a comment on Pasukim Vayechi that
giving someone emotional support is often even more powerful than giving them physical, practical help. Chazal v'drasha, pashup shat leven shinayim mechalav, means the teeth are white from the milk. Mechalav, from the milk. They drink so much milk, they're beautifully healthy white teeth. The chazal have a drasha, mechalav means than. That giving the person the whites of your teeth is better than giving him a cup of milk. And sometimes, even though the person is poor and he needs physical food, but you're going to do even more for him by just listening. Or just smiling, just caring about his emotions. Maybe he needs a cup of milk also if he's poor and thirsty and hungry. But we should not for a moment diminish in our minds the value of giving people the emotional oxygen they need by just listening. And that's something that everyone can do. You don't have to have money to do it. You don't have to have training to do it. You have to have ears and a heart. And a head is also very important in that. You don't have to have solutions. If you think about it, often when if you're on the other end, if you're the one who has stuff going on, sometimes you're seeking solutions, but even more than that, you might be able to figure out solutions on your own if someone would just pay attention and hear you out. So, and that's something you don't have to have the answer. Someone comes over to tell you their tale of woe, you don't have to have the answers. But if you have a heart and a head and a pair of ears, which Baruch Hashem has Baruch Hu blessed all of you with, you can listen. And you can give a person the emotional oxygen of knowing that someone's actually hearing you. So that's, in and of itself, critically important. Critically, critically important tool for you to be vastly, for you to be able to make impact on hundreds, if not thousands, maybe even tens of thousands of people in the course of your lifetime. Once you flip that switch and begin to train yourself, it's not going to be perfect right away, but train yourself to be a real listener, a caring, empathic listener. And it's, I think, a mashal, again, not the same, but a mash, as also this is, as a building a mashal for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, a lot of times being heard is very valuable, even if you don't get a response or a tool immediately. Kal v'chomer, when we know HaKadosh Baruch Hu now, at the same time, obviously it's harder, because if a person is listening to me well, he's gonna, I'll be able to tell that he's listening. I may do 95% of the talking, I see from the facial expression, I see even from the phone, I can hear from the words that he is saying, that he's listening, he's encouraging me to share more, and he's trying to hear how we're feeling. At Kodesh Baruch, we don't get that. Absolutely. You don't get that feedback that I'm listening, I hear you. Right? That's true. But at the same time that we have Emunah, at Kodesh Baruch was listening, and not only that he's listening and caring, but also that he is practically involved, although I may not see it. Much as, and with this we close this marshal, I might go over and talk to someone about what's going on in my life. And he might only, and this will hopefully happen over the course of your lifetime, you go over to talk to someone, and he might just listen, and be caring, and listen, and that's the end of the conversation. And you think, well, you got the conversation, then he heard you. Baruch Hashem, that was very great. And you may find out a few months later that, without telling you, he put things into place to help your situation practically. But you didn't get that right away. During the conversation, he listened. In the long run, it was helpful on multiple levels. I think that maybe is it captures, begins to capture the essence of tefillah. One follow-up question from Rav Dov.
The problem with that is that, the problem that I have with that is that, it's very important that to listen to someone and to give them that emotional support by being there for them and like being there and listening, even if you don't say anything, but at the same time, like it seems more like, let's say my phone is broken, so I call someone, but I can't tell if they're actually, they picked up or not. So I call my friend to tell him everything, he doesn't respond when I'm saying anything, so for all I know, he never actually picked up the phone. So, does it really help my emotional situation if I call someone who I can't see,
right,
and I can't, and I have no idea if they listen or not, and then my situation improves maybe because they helped me, maybe because they didn't?
Let's say you got a text.
I have no idea.
Let's say you got a text from your friend, my phone is stuck on mute.
But I didn't.
But you did. I mean,
my other friend wrote me a manual for how to speak to people who are on mute.
Right, so that's a larger question of Emunah, which is also a great question. But that's what we're plugging into. That's what our Masorah teaches us. That's what our Nevi'im taught us. That HaKadosh Baruch Hu listens even when he's inobvious. As I said before, it's not a perfect mashal. It's not a perfect mashal. And it's also imperfect mashal in the sense that tefillah is much more than just a cathartic opportunity to be heard. It is that also. And it's more than, but certainly more than just an emotional experience. It's a spiritual experience also. But as just as a mashal, to recognize that quiet listening can be powerful. Let's say it's the same thing. And obviously there's an emunah aspect to tefillah that's not relevant when I relate to people. For sure. I would say, in response to that point, there is a different type of trust, belief issue that comes to play with people also. Because you're trusting that this person really is who he claims to be. They really cares as much as he does. That I can rely on his confidence. I can rely on his discretion. I can rely on his wisdom. They really caring quite the way. He's genuinely caring, not just putting on a show. With people also, there are unknowns. The way we sort of have a sense of trust with people is different when with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. With people, it's sort of gaining that intuition from the unspoken aspects of relating. And hopefully we're reading them well. Right? And with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's different. But it's true in all relationships is an element of trust, reliance, belief. Different. Again, it's not the same. But I think it's important to recognize that is the way we operate in different contexts. So believing that.